trying to catch my breath. Nightmares were directly tied to epics and their weaknesses. If I was having a persistent one, well, it might mean something. I kicked off my blankets and realized that Megan wasn't in her place. She got up in the night a lot. I picked my way around the others toward the hall. I didn't like this fear. I wasn't the coward I'd been as a child. I could face anything, anything. I reached the hallway and checked the room across from ours. Empty. Where had Megan gotten to? Abraham and I had returned from the Stingray Clan's base late enough that we'd decided to call it a night and save digging into the new information Tia had given us for tomorrow. I told them Prof's weakness, which had set them thinking. That was enough for the moment. I continued to the steps, my feet bare on the saltstone floor. We had to be very careful with water. Spill it, and the ground started to rub off on your feet. Even as it was, I woke up in the mornings with salt crust on my legs. Building a city out of something that could dissolve was decidedly worse than building one out of steel. Fortunately, I didn't much notice the smell any longer, and even the dryness was starting to feel normal. I found Abraham on the middle floor in the kitchen. He was bathed in the light of his mobile, the urtich on his hands, and a large globe of mercury hovering in front of him. The mercury certainly had an otherworldly cast. Perfectly reflective, it undulated as Abraham moved his hands around it. He drew his palms apart, which caused the large globe of mercury to elongate like a loaf of French bread. The way reflections distorted and shifted on its mirrored surface made me imagine it was showing us a different, distorted world.
"We must be careful," Abraham said softly. "I think I've learned to contain the fumes this metal releases, but perhaps it would be wise for me to find another place to practice."
"I don't like splitting us up," I said, getting myself a cup of water from the large plastic cooler we kept on the counter. Abraham spread his palm out, and the mercury made a disc in front of him, like a wide plate or a shield.
"It is marvelous," he said. "It conforms perfectly to my commands. And look at this."
He brought the disc down, flat portion facing the ground, then hesitantly stepped onto it. It held him.
"Sparks," I said. "You can fly."
"Not exactly," Abraham said. "I cannot move it far while I'm standing on it, and it needs to be nearby for me to manipulate it. But watch this."
The disc of mercury rippled, and a piece of it siphoned off, forming steps in front of Abraham. Very thin, very narrow, reflective metal steps. He was able to walk up them, stooping down as he got closer and closer to the ceiling.
"This will be of great use against Prof," Abraham said. "It is very strong. Perhaps I could use it to counteract his force fields."
"Yeah,"
Abraham glanced at me. "Not enthusiastic?"
"Just distracted. Is Larsner still awake down there?"
"Last I checked," Abraham said. "He does not seem to sleep."
We discussed what to do with him, but had come to no conclusions. So far, though, he hadn't posed much of a threat. "Where's Megan?" I asked.
"Haven't seen her."
That was odd. If she'd left, she would have had to pass this way. And I hadn't seen her on the top floor, which was pretty small. Maybe Abraham hadn't noticed her slipping by. He continued to work with the urtich, climbing down his steps and creating other shapes. Watching him was hard, but mainly for juvenile reasons. We'd all agreed that Abraham should practice with the device, with Cody or Mizzy as backup. Abraham was our primary point man now.
"But Sparks, that device looked cool."
Hopefully it would survive our activities here. Once we had Prof and Tia back, I could return to running point where I belonged. I left Abraham and walked down to the bottom floor to check on Larsner. I stopped in the doorway to his room.
"Wow.
The once bare walls were now draped with soft red velvet. A set of lanterns glowed on mahogany tables. Larsener lay on a couch as elegant as any we'd had in the Babylar hideout, wearing a pair of large headphones, with his eyes closed. I couldn't hear what, if anything, he was listening to. The headphones were likely connected wirelessly to a mobile. I stepped into the room. Sparks! It seemed way larger than it had before. I paced it off, and found that it was bigger. Spatial distortion, I thought, adding that to his list of powers. Calamity, that was an incredible power. I'd only heard rumors about epics having it. And his ability to materialize objects from thin air. You could beat him, I said. Larsener said nothing, remaining on his couch, not opening his eyes. Larsener, I said more loudly. He started, then ripped off his headphones and shot me a glare.
What?
You could beat him, I repeated. Prof, if you were to face him, you might be able to win. I know you have multiple prime invincibilities. Add on top of those the ability to create anything, to distort space. You could beat him.
Of course I couldn't. Why do you think I'm here with you useless idiots?
I haven't figured that out yet.
I don't fight,
Larsener said, moving to put his headphones back on. I'm not allowed.
By who?
By myself? Let others do the fighting. My place is to observe. Even ruling this city is probably inappropriate for me. People, including me, tended to work under the assumption that all epics were essentially the same. Selfish, destructive, narcissistic. But while they did share these traits, they also had their own individual levels of strangeness. Obliteration quoted scripture and sought, it seemed, to destroy all life on the planet. Regalia channeled her darkness toward greater and greater schemes. Nightwielder, in New Cago, insisted on working through lesser intermediaries. Larsener seemed to have his own psychosis. I reached into a bowl on a little marble pedestal beside the door. Glass beads trickled between my fingers. No. Diamonds. I don't suppose, I said, you could make me a...
Stop!
I glanced at Larsener.
I should have made this clear at the start, he said. You get nothing from me. I am not here to give you gifts, nor to make your life easier. I will not become some servant.
I sighed, dropping the diamonds. You don't sleep, I said, trying a different tack.
So?
You gained that power from another epic, I assume. Did you take that one specifically because of the nightmares? He stared at me for a moment, then suddenly tossed his headphones aside and leaped to his feet. He took a single step but crossed the wide distance between us in an instant.
How do you know about my nightmares?
He demanded, looming in front of me, larger, taller. I gaped, my heart racing again. Before this, he'd been determinedly lazy with us. Now, dwarfed by Larsener, who stood 7 feet tall with a terrible sneer and wild eyes, I felt I was a moment from being destroyed. I swallowed. All epics have them, Larsener. Nightmares.
Nonsense, he said. They are mine. I am unique.
You can talk to Megan, I said. She'll tell you she has them. Or you can go find any epic and beat it out of them. They have nightmares, which are tied to their weaknesses. What the person fears becomes,
Stop your lies!
Larsener shouted, then growled at me and spun on his heel, stalking back to his couch and throwing himself down.
Epics are weak because they are fools. They will destroy this world. Give men power and they abuse it. That is all one needs to know.
And you've never felt it? I asked. The sudden darkness that comes from using your powers? The lack of empathy? The desire to destroy?
What are you talking about? He said, silly little man.
I hesitated, trying to read him, and having a tough time of it. Maybe he was constantly consumed by the darkness. He certainly acted arrogant enough. But he hadn't hurt any of us. He liked to order us around, but not in the way of an epic, I realized. In the way of a spoiled child. You faced it young, I guessed. You grew up as an epic, able to get whatever you wanted. But you never felt the darkness. Don't be stupid, he said. I forbid you to speak of this idiocy anymore. Darkness? You want to blame the terrible things that epics do on some nebulous idea or feeling? Bah! Men destroy themselves because that's what they deserve, not because of some mystical force or emotion. He has to be facing it continually, I thought. Whatever his fear is, he must see it every day and defeat it. That was what we learned with Megan. If she didn't stay vigilant, the darkness crept back toward her. I slipped from his palace of a room. I do hate you, you understand? Larsner called from behind. I glanced in again. He lounged on his couch, and like that, he really did look like a kid. A teenager with his headphones on, trying to ignore the world. You deserve this, he continued. People are evil to the core. That's what the epics prove. That's why you're dying out. He closed his eyes and tipped his head back, away from me. I shivered, then checked the other room, which was now packed with supplies. For Megan. Not there. Above, Abraham was still practicing in the kitchen. On the top floor, I knocked outside the small bathroom. We'd resorted to using buckets again, unfortunately. Finally, I peeked into the other bedroom once more. Empty. Where? Wait. Something about that dark room seemed too, dark? I frowned and walked into the room, passing through a veil of something. Megan sat cross-legged on the floor on the other side, a small candle on the floor beside her. She was staring out the wall, which was now gone. The wall of the hideout was simply gone, and there was no city beyond either. Megan looked out upon a nighttime landscape of blowing fields beneath a billion stars. She was rubbing her hand. She noticed me as I walked up, first reaching for the gun on the floor beside her, then relaxing when she realized who it was. Hey, she said. I didn't wake you, did I? Nah, I said, settling down beside her. That's quite the view. Easy to make, she said. In so many of the branching possibilities, Ildithia didn't come this direction. It was simple to find one where it isn't here, and the field is empty. So what is this, then? I asked, reaching out. Is it real? My hand felt something. The salt stone wall, though it looked like I was touching empty space. Just a shadow, for now, she said. But you can go further, I said. Like you did when saving me from Nighthawk. Yes. You brought Firefight through, I continued, feeling again at the invisible wall. Not just his shadow, not just a projection of the other world. He himself was here. I see your brain working, David, she said, cautious. What are you thinking? Is there a reality where Prof hasn't given in to his powers? Probably, Megan said. That's a little change, and very recent. So you might be able to bring him here. Not for very long, Megan said. What? You want to replace him in the team? My solutions are temporary, it... She trailed off, eyes widening. You don't want a new prof as a replacement. You want one to fight ours. His fear is his powers, Megan. I initially tried to think how to trick him into gifting his abilities to someone, but there's no reason we have to do that when we have you. If you can bring a version of Prof in from another world, we can make them face off, and bam! We engage Prof's weakness, make him confront his own powers in the most direct way possible, and therefore help him defeat the darkness. She looked thoughtful. We could try it, she said. But David, I don't like relying on the powers. My powers.
I looked to where she was rubbing her hand, a fresh burn. I glanced at the candle.
This might be the only way, I told her. He certainly won't be expecting it. If we're going to save Tia...
You still want me to practice? She said. Go farther than I've gone before.
Yes.
That's dangerous.
I didn't reply. I knew it was, and I knew I shouldn't be asking this of her. It wasn't fair.
But Sparks, Tia was in Prof's hands. We had to do something.
All right, Megan said. I'm going to try to alter reality a little further. You might want to move back from the wall.
I did so. Megan's face darkened in concentration. And the entire building vanished, leaving me alone, hanging in the sky, in an unfamiliar world.
23. My stomach lurched as I dropped a good 20 feet before crashing into some thick brush. The growth broke my fall, but the landing knocked the wind out of me. I lay there, trying to gasp, but unable to draw in breath. Finally, painfully, I managed to suck air into my lungs. A star-filled sky spun and wavered above me, my watering eyes making it difficult to see. Sparks! There were so many stars, and in such strange patterns. Clusters, ribbons, fields of light upon the black. I still wasn't used to it. In New Cago, the sky had been veiled in darkness by Nightwielder, so I'd had to imagine stars. Over the years, my memories had grown fuzzy, and I'd started to imagine the stars spaced evenly, like in my vague recollections of picture books. The reality was far messier, more like cereal spilled on the floor. I groaned and managed to sit up. Well, I thought, looking around, I probably deserved that. What had happened? Had I been sucked into Megan's shadow dimension? It seemed that way at first, though I was confronted with an oddity. Ildithia was here, off in the distance. Hadn't Megan said that in her shadow world it hadn't come this way? Something else was wrong. It took me an embarrassingly long time to figure it out. Where was Calamity? The stars were all there, sprinkling the sky, but the omnipresent red spot was gone. That was discomforting. Calamity was always there at night. Even in New Cago, it had pierced the darkness, glaring at us. I climbed to my feet, staring upward, trying to find it. And as I stood, everything around me fuzzed. I found myself in our hideout again, near Megan, who was shaking me.
David? Oh, Sparks, David!
I'm fine, I said, trying to take it all in. Yes, I was back, right where I'd been standing when I'd fallen. The wall was no longer transparent.
What happened?
I sent you through by accident, Megan said. You vanished completely until you popped back out.
Sparks!
Interesting.
Terrifying, she said. Who knows what you might have found on the other side, David? What if I dropped you into a world where the atmosphere was different and you suffocated?
It was like our world, I said, rubbing my side and looking around. Ildithia was there, except in the distance.
What? Really? She asked. Are you sure? I specifically picked a world where this region was empty, so I'd have a good view.
I settled down. Yeah. Can you reach out to the same world again on purpose?
I don't know, she said. The things I do, they just kind of happen, like bending your elbow.
Or eating a bagel, I said, nodding.
Not actually like that, but whatever. She hesitated, then settled down on the floor beside me.
A moment later, Cody peeked in on us. Apparently she'd been too loud when she'd cried out to me. Megan's veil of dark fog had vanished, and he could see us.
"Everything all right?" he asked, rifle in hand.
Depends on your definition, Megan said, lying back on the floor. David convinced me to do something stupid.
He's good at that, Cody said, leaning against the doorframe.
We're testing her powers, I said to Cody.
Ah, he said. And y'all didn't warn me first?
What would you have done? I asked.
Gotten up and eaten some haggis, Cody said. Always nice to have a good haggis before someone accidentally destroys your hideout in a burst of unexpected epic power.
I frowned. What's haggis? Don't ask, Megan said. He's just being silly.
I can show him,
Cody said, thumbing over his shoulder. Wait, Megan said. You actually have some?
Yeah, found it in the market the other day. Guess they believe in using the whole animal around here, eh?
He paused.
The stuff's nasty, of course.
Megan frowned. Isn't it like a Scottish national dish or something?
Sure, sure, Cody said, sauntering into the room. Being nasty is what makes it Scottish. Only the bravest of men dare eat it. Proves you're a warrior, like wearing a kilt on a cold, windy day.
He settled down with us.
So what's up with the powers?
Megan sent me into an alternate dimension, I said.
Neat, Cody said, digging in his pocket and pulling out a chocolate bar. You didn't bring me a mutant bunny or something, did you?
No mutant bunnies, I said. But Calamity wasn't there.
Now that's even stranger, Cody said, taking a bite of the chocolate bar.
He grimaced.
What?
I asked.
Tastes like dirt, lad, he said. I miss the old days.
Megan, I said, can you bring up an image of that world again? She looked at me, skeptical. You want to keep going? By the measuring stick of epic powers, I said, this doesn't seem too dangerous. I mean, you dropped me into another world, but I popped back in under a minute. And if that's a result of lack of practice? Megan asked. What if, in doing it more, it gets more dangerous? Then that means you're learning to affect things more permanently, I said, which is going to be a huge advantage to us. It's worth the risk. She drew her lips to a line, but seemed persuaded. Maybe I was a little too good at getting people to do stupid things. Prophet accused me of that on more than one occasion. Megan waved at the wall she'd changed before, and it vanished, once again providing the view of an empty plain of grass. Now the other side, I said, pointing at the wall with the doorway Cody had come through. That's dangerous, she warned. Trapping us between two shadows means that the other dimension is more likely to bleed into... But you don't care, do you? All right. You owe me a back rub for this, by the way. The opposite wall vanished. And it now seemed like the three of us were in a solitary building on the plains, with two walls cut out. The new perspective gave us a view of what I'd seen before. Ildithia in the distance.
Huh,
Cody said, standing up. He unslung his rifle and used the scope to inspect the city. The city is in a different place in this dimension, Megan said. Not surprising. It's easier to view dimensions that are similar to ours. So I should have guessed.
Nah, that's not it, Cody said. Ildithia is in the same place in that dimension, but your window isn't open in where our hideout would be there.
What?
Megan said, standing up. See those fields? Those are the eastern side of Ildithia, marked by that stand of trees. Same as in our dimension. The city's in the same place. We're merely looking at it from the outside.
Megan seemed troubled. What's the problem? I asked her. I always assumed that my shadows had a direct location connection, she said. That if I pulled something through, it was because that was what was happening in another dimension right where I was.
We're talking about altering the shape of reality, Cody said with a shrug. Why should location matter, Lass?
I don't know, she said. It's not what I've always thought. It makes me wonder how much I've been wrong about. No calamity, I said, walking as close to the invisible wall as I dared.
Megan, what if the shadows you grab are always from the same world, a parallel one to ours? I keep seeing firefight during moments when you use your powers. That seems to indicate that the shadows you're pulling are always from his world.
Yeah, she said. That, or there are hundreds upon hundreds of different versions of him, and each world has one.
Cody grunted. It sounds like a headache.
You have no idea, Megan said. She sighed. I've done things that your theory can't explain, David. Though perhaps there is one similar parallel world that I reach into most often. But if my powers can't find what I need there, they reach farther. And right after I reincarnate, they go anywhere, do anything. I stared at that distant Eldithia for as long as Megan kept the shadow active. A world parallel to our own. A world without calamity. What would it be like? How were there still epics if there was no calamity to give them powers? Eventually Megan let the images vanish, and I gave her a neck rub to try to deal with the headache all of this had given her. She kept glancing at the candle, but didn't reach for it. Before long, all three of us returned to our beds. We needed sleep. Tomorrow we would dig into Tia's plan and try to figure out how to save her.
Part 3. 24.
I rubbed my hand along the saltstone shelf, disconcerted to find that my fingers left gouges. I dusted my hand off, sprinkling pink sand to the floor. As I stood there, the shelf on the wall split in the middle, crumbling away. Salt ran down like sand through an hourglass.
Abraham? I said as he passed.
We have a day left before we need to leave, David, he said.
Our hideout is literally disintegrating.
Accessories and ornaments crumble first, he said, ducking into our third floor spare bedroom, the place where Megan and I had experimented with her powers the night before. The floors and walls will hold for a time yet.
I didn't find this very comforting. We'll still have to move soon, find a new hideout.
Cody's been working on that. He says he has a few options to talk to you about later today.
What about the caverns? I asked. Under the land the city is passing over. The ones made by Dig Zone. We could hide there.
Perhaps, Abraham said.
I followed Abraham into the room where Cody was whistling and sweeping salt into a pile. Apparently the salt stone we'd grown disintegrated at the same rate as the stone around it. Soon this entire region would collapse, and the salt would vanish. Morning light shone through the thinning salt stone roof above. I settled in on a stool, one of the ones Cody had purchased during a scrounging mission. It was strange to be in a city where there wasn't trash to pick through. Eldithia just moved away, leaving behind anything people discarded. It left a sparseness I hadn't seen in New Cago or Babylar. Megan came in, but didn't sit. She leaned against the wall, arms folded, wearing her jacket and jeans. Abraham knelt by the wall, fiddling with the imager, which he'd calibrated earlier. Cody lifted his old broom and shook his head.
You know, I think I might be making more salt than I'm cleaning up, he sighed,
walking over and settling down on a stool beside me. Finally, Mizzy entered, bearing one of the team's rugged laptops. She tossed a data chip to Abraham, who plugged it into the imager. This isn't going to be pretty, guys, Mizzy noted.
Cody is on the team, Abraham said. We are accustomed to things that are not pretty.
Cody tossed the broom at him. Abraham engaged the imager, and the walls and floor went black. A three-dimensional projection of Eldithia appeared on them, but one drawn as a red wireframe. We seemed to be hovering above it. At one time this had been disorienting to me, but I was used to it now. I leaned forward, peering down through the floor toward the large city. It seemed to be growing and disintegrating at an accelerated rate in this illustration, though the details weren't terribly specific. It's a time-lapse computer model from Tia's data, Mizzy said. I thought it was cool. The city moves at a constant rate, so you can predict what its shape and look will be for any given day. Apparently whoever controls the city can steer it, using a big wheel that grows in one of the buildings downtown. What happens if it hits another city? I asked, uncomfortable. In the time-lapse model, the city looked alive, like some kind of crawling creature, buildings shooting up like stretching spines.
Collisions are messy, Abraham said. When I scouted here years back, I asked that very question. If Eldithia intersects a city, it grows into the cracks, buildings squeezing between buildings, streets covering streets. In times past, people got trapped inside rooms while sleeping and died. But a week later the salt crumbled and Eldithia moved on, basically unaffected.
Anyway, Mizzy said, this ain't the ugly part, kids. Wait until you see the plan. The plan looked well developed when I glanced at it, I said, frowning. Oh, it's developed, Mizzy said. The plan is awesome. But we're never going to pull it off. She turned her hand, using the motion to zoom us down toward the wireframe city. In Newcago, this had all been done with cameras, and it had felt like we were flying. Here it seemed more like we were in a simulation, which made it a lot less disorienting. We stopped near the downtown, which was, in the simulation, currently on the growing edge of the city, fresh and new. A particularly tall building sprang up, cylindrical like a giant thermos.
Sharp Tower, Mizzy said. That's its new name. Used to be some fancy hotel in Atlanta. It's where Larsener made his palace, and it's where Prof has set up. Upper floors are occupied by whatever lackeys are most favored at the moment, with the reigning epic living in the large room near the very, very tippy-top.
They climb all those steps? I asked. Prof can fly. Do the rest take the stairs?
Elevators, Mizzy said.
Made of salt? I asked, looking up.
They swap in a metal one and use new cables. Salt ones don't work. Go figure. And bring in a motor. The shafts are perfectly reasonable, though.
I frowned. Still seemed like a lot of work, especially since you had to redo it each week, though a little slave labor and heavy lifting for their minions was hardly a bother.
Tia's plan, Mizzy said, is pretty good. Her goal was to kill Prof, but she had decided she needed more intel before trying that. So the first part of her plan includes a detailed plot for infiltrating Sharp Tower. Tia intended to raid Prof's computers to figure out what he was up to in the city.
But we, I said, can use that same plan to rescue Tia instead of raiding his computers.
Yup, Mizzy said. Judging by the signal from the broken mobile, Tia's been stashed near the top of this building, on the 70th floor. She's in some kind of old hotel room. It's a nice suite, judging by the maps. I'd have expected something more prison-like.
She said Prof would at first try to persuade her he was rational, I said, feeling cold. Once she refuses to give him the information he asks for, he'll grow impatient. That's when things will start going badly.
So, what is this plan? Megan said. She was still leaning against the wall, which was obscured by the imager's blackness.
We hovered, looking up at the red lines of Sharp Tower. A stupid name, since it was basically round and had a flat top.
Right, Mizzy said. Two teams will run the mission. First one will infiltrate a party at the top of the building. Larsener let one of the town's most important people, an epic named Loophole, throw parties in Sharp Tower. Prof hasn't stopped the tradition.
Infiltrate? Abraham asked.
How?
Heads of important communities in the city get an invitation to Loophole's parties in exchange for sending specialist workers to help throw the shindig, Mizzy explained. Tia planned to join with members of the Stingray clan, who were already attending.
That's going to be tough, Abraham said. Will we be able to do the same? We don't have the trust of any of the clans.
It gets worse, Mizzy said pleasantly.
Watch, Cody asked.
There are animations, Mizzy said.
A group of people, represented by bouncing stick figures, hopped along the road and joined a larger group thronging the tower. The two teams were represented in blue. One group bounced their way into the elevators at the rear. Another team slipped in through a back door and entered a different elevator shaft. They somehow shot up along the shaft toward the roof.
Huh?
I asked.
Wire climbers, Mizzy said. Devices you hook to a cable, then ride up by holding on. See, there's a service elevator, since the real important folk need other folk to do stuff for them. And who wants to ride up in the elevator with stinky servants, right? The second team sneaks up that shaft to position themselves on the top residential floor.
And we get these wire climbers how? I asked.
No idea, Mizzy said. There certainly aren't any for sale in the city. I think the community that took Tia in must have been planning to buy them somehow.
I sat tight, seeing what Mizzy meant by ugly. When we'd departed the Stingray clan, Carla and her companions had been very clear in explaining to me that they wouldn't help rescue Tia. They were too frightened by their close call with Prof, and were determined to get their people out of the city. Over the next week, they'd covertly pull out of Ildithia and run.
That's not the whole of it, Mizzy said. To pull off Tia's mission, we need a whole ton of other stuff. Advanced hacking devices, parachutes, kitchen mixers.
Really? Cody asked.
Yup.
Sweet, he said, settling back.
It didn't seem sweet to me.
I watched the plan play out, as animated by the little bouncing figures. Two teams operating independently to distract, infiltrate, and steal, all without Prof knowing what had happened. It was a good plan, and we could use it to get to Tia instead of the computers. It was also impossible.
It would take months to gather this equipment,
Abraham said as we watched figures parachuting off the building.
Assuming we could pay for it.
Yeah, Mizzy said, arms folded. Warned you. We're going to have to come up with something else, and we have less time and fewer resources, which sucks.
The simulation of stick figures ended, and the building hovering in front of us eventually reached the edge of Ildithia and disintegrated, melting away like a lonely ice cream sundae with nobody to eat it. We don't have time to come up with something better, I thought, glancing at the list of required and suggested supplies that hovered in the air nearby. Or even something worse. I stood and walked from the room. Megan was first to chase after me, and she caught up quickly.
David,
she asked, then scowled as she saw that her jacket was covered in salt from leaning against the wall. She brushed it off as we headed down the steps to the second floor. The others followed as well. I didn't speak, leading the group to the first floor. Here we could hear voices from the buildings next to us. Our neighbors were moving out in preparation for their homes falling apart. I turned and walked into Larsener's room, where the Epic was sitting wrapped in blankets, though it wasn't that cold, in a chair beside a fireplace, which he hadn't lit. I needed to play this cool, careful, like a true leader. I flopped down on one of Larsener's couches.
Well, it's over. We're totally screwed. Sorry, Great One, we failed you.
What are you babbling about?
He demanded, perking up in his blankets.
Prof captured a member of our team, I said. He's probably torturing her right now. He'll soon know anything he wants about us. We'll all be dead by the end of the day.
Idiot!
Larsener said, standing up. The rest of the team gathered outside the room.
You might want to simply kill us yourself, I said to Larsener, so that you get the satisfaction instead of Prof.
Megan gave me a what are you doing, you slants, look. I was pretty used to that one.
How did this happen?
Larsener demanded, pacing.
Aren't you supposed to be skilled, efficient, adept? I see that you're as utterly incapable as I guessed all along.
Yep, I said.
I will be alone in the city, he continued. Nobody else would dare stand against a high epic. You've thoroughly inconvenienced me, human.
To an epic, that was a major insult.
I'm sorry, my lord, I said, but there's nothing we can do now.
What? You aren't going to even try to kill your friend?
Well, there's a plan that...
I trailed off.
Kill?
Yes, yes, Murder her, so she can't speak. The rational course.
Oh. Right. I swallowed.
Well, we've got this plan, and it's a good one, but we'll never make it work. It requires all kinds of things we don't have. Parachutes, mannequins, technology.
I made a good show of it. Of course, if someone could make that stuff for us.
Larsner spun on me, and his eyes narrowed. I smiled innocently.
Impudent peon, he muttered.
All you epics use language like that, I said. Do you take some kind of evil dictator language course or something? I mean, who talks like,
"This is a ploy to get me to be your servant,"
Larsner interrupted, stepping over to me.
"I expressly told you that I would not use my powers to serve you."
I stood up, meeting his eyes. "Tia, a member of our team, has been captured by Prof. We have a plan to save her, but without resources we won't be able to make it work. Either you summon the objects we need, or we'll have to pull out of the city and abandon this cause."
"I do not get involved,"
Larsner said. "You're already involved, bub. You can start working as a member of this team, or you're out. Good luck surviving in the city. Prof has every thug and two-bit epic here searching for you. Random stops on the streets with a dowser, huge bounties, your likeness being distributed." Larsner clenched his jaw.
"I thought I was supposed to be the evil one."
"No. You beat the darkness somehow. You're not evil. You're just spoiled and selfish." I nodded toward the others. "We'll bring you a list. It should all be within your powers. You can make, what, anything up to about the size of a couch, right? Range of 3 miles, if I recall. Maximum mass limit shouldn't be an issue."
"How?"
He focused on me, as if seeing me for the first time.
"How do you know that?"
"You got your conjuration powers from Brainstorm. I had a whole file on her." I walked toward the doorway.
"You're right about one thing," Larsner said after me. "I'm not evil. I'm the only one. Everyone else in this filthy, horrible, insane world is broken. Evil, sinful, revolting. Whatever you want to call it. Broken."
I looked over my shoulder, meeting his eyes again. In those eyes, I swear I saw it. The darkness, like an infinite pool. Seething hatred, disdain, overwhelming lust for destruction. I was wrong. He hadn't overcome it. He was still one of them. Something else held him back. Disturbed, I turned and left the room. I told myself I needed to get him a list as soon as possible, but the truth was that I couldn't look into those eyes any longer, and I wanted to be as far from them as I could get. 25.
"Well, yes," Edmund said over my mobile. "As I think about it, something like that did happen to me."
"Tell me," I said, eager. I wore the mobile stuck to my jacket on the shoulder, earpiece in my ear, as I put together things for the mission tonight. I was alone in a room of our new interim hideout. It had been 5 days since Tia's capture, and we'd moved as planned. I'd talked to Cody about using the caverns under the city, but we'd eventually decided they hadn't been explored well enough and might be unstable. Instead, we'd used one of his suggestions, a hidden location under a park bridge. As eager as I was to get to Tia, we hadn't been able to move immediately. We needed the time to set up somewhere new and practice. Beyond that, Tia's plan required a party to be happening at Sharp Tower, and the soonest one was tonight. We had to hope that Tia had been able to hold out.
"It must have been, 2 or 3 years ago now," Edmund said. "Steelheart was told by my previous masters that dogs were my weakness. He would occasionally lock me up with them, not for any specific punishment, though. I never could figure it out. It seemed random."
"He wanted you to be afraid of him," I said, going through the contents of a pack and checking it against my list. "You're so even-keeled, Edmund. Sometimes you don't seem afraid of anything. You probably worried him."
"Oh, I'm afraid," he said. "I'm an ant among giants, David. I'm hardly a threat."
That wouldn't have mattered to Steelheart. He'd kept New Cargo in perpetual gloom and darkness, all to make certain that his people lived in fear. Paranoia had been his middle name. Except he'd had only one name, Steelheart. So paranoia had been more like a last name for him.
"Well," Edmund continued over the line, "he'd lock me in with dogs, angry, terrible ones. I'd huddle against the wall and weep. It never seemed to get better, maybe even worse."
"You were afraid of them?"
"Why wouldn't I be?" he said. "They negated my powers. They ruined me, turned me into a common man."
I frowned, zipping up the backpack and then taking off my mobile so I could look at the screen and see Edmund, an older man with brown skin and a faint Indian accent.
"You gave away your powers anyway, Edmund," I said. "You're a gifter. Why would being powerless bother you?"
"Ah, but my value to others has let me live in luxury and relative peace, while other men starve and scramble for life. My powers make me important, David. Losing them terrified me."
"Dogs terrified you, Edmund."
"That's what I just said."
"Yes, but you might have the cause wrong. What if you weren't afraid of dogs because they negated your powers? What if they negated your powers because you were afraid of them?"
He looked away from me.
"Nightmares?" I asked.
He nodded. I couldn't see much of the room he was in, a safe house outside New Cargo, one Prof didn't know about. We hadn't been able to contact Edmund until Nighthawk had delivered him a new mobile, via drone. He'd turned the old one off at our request, and had neglected to ever turn it on again. He'd claimed he was merely being careful in case our attack on the Foundry had gone wrong. Another one of his little rebellions.
"Nightmares," he said, still looking away from the screen. "Being hunted. Teeth gnashing. Rending. Ripping."
I gave him a moment and turned back to my work. As I knelt to the side, something slipped out of my t-shirt at the top. My pendant, the one Abraham had given me, marked with a stylized S-shape. The sign of the faithful, those who believed good epics would come. I wore it now. After all, I did have faith in the epics, kind of. I tucked it into my shirt. Three packs checked over, two left. Even Cody, who would run ops on this mission, needed an emergency pack in case things went wrong. Our new hideout, a hastily constructed set of three rooms beneath the bridge in a rarely traveled park, wasn't as secure as our other one, and we didn't want to leave much behind. I needed to finish this, but I wanted to be able to see Edmund, not just hear him. This was an important conversation. I thought for a moment, then spotted one of Cody's camo baseball caps sitting atop a stack of supplies we'd carted from the previous hideout. I smiled, grabbed some duct tape, and hung my mobile from the front of the bill. It took about half a roll of the tape, but whatever. When I put the cap on, the mobile hung down in front of me like a HUD on a helmet. Well, a very sloppy HUD. Either way, it meant I could see Edmund while keeping both hands free.
"What are you doing?" he asked, frowning.
"Nothing," I said, getting back to work, mobile dangling near my face. "What happened with the dogs, Edmund? The day things changed. The day you faced them down."
"It's silly."
"Tell me anyway."
He seemed to weigh the situation. He didn't have to obey, not with all of us so distant.
"Please, Edmund," I said.
He shrugged.
"One of the dogs went for a little girl. Someone opened the doors to let me out and... well, I knew her. She was a child of one of my guards. So when one of the beasts lunged for her, I tackled it."
He blushed.
"It was her dog. It didn't want to attack her. It was just excited to see its master."
"You faced your fear," I said, digging into the next pack, comparing its items to my list.
You confronted the thing that terrified you.
I guess that's one possibility, he said. Things did change after that. These days, being around dogs still dampens my powers, but it doesn't completely negate them. I assumed I'd been wrong all along. I thought maybe my weakness was actually pet dander or something like that. I couldn't experiment, though, without alerting everyone to what I was doing.
Would that happen to Megan, too? Over time? Would fire stop negating her powers? Her weakness still worked on her, but she could make the darkness retreat. Perhaps what Edmund experienced was the next stage. I zipped up the pack and set it with the others, beside the wall.
Tell me, Edmund said. Why is it that, if dogs are my weakness, devices with power cells charged by my abilities don't fail when they're around dogs?
Hmm? I said, distracted.
Oh, the large dispersal rule.
What? An epic's weakness has less and less influence on their powers the farther you get from the epic's presence, I said, zipping up the fourth pack. Like in Nukago, if Steelheart's powers had been negated in all places where someone didn't fear him, then he wouldn't have been able to turn the whole city to steel. Most of the people in the city didn't know who he was and couldn't fear him. There would have been pockets of non-steel all over the place.
Ah, Edmund said.
I stood up, setting the pack with the others. This hat was not working as well as I wanted it to. It was too front-heavy and kept slipping down. Needs ballast, I decided. I grabbed the duct tape and used what was left to attach a canteen to the back of the cap. Much better.
Are you all right? Edmund asked.
Yep, thanks for the information.
You can repay me, he said, by agreeing to give me to another master.
I stopped in place, the empty cardboard roll from the duct tape in my hand. I thought you liked helping us.
You've grown weak, he shrugged. You can't protect me any longer, David. I'm tired of hiding in this little room. I'd rather serve a high epic who can make sure I'm cared for. I hear Night's Sorrow is still dominant.
I felt sick. You can go free, Edmund. I won't stop you.
And risk being murdered?
He gave me a thin-lipped smile. It's dangerous out there. You've escaped the darkness, Edmund, I said. You stumbled on the secret before anyone else. If you don't want to run off, why not come join us? Be a member of the team. He picked up a book, turning away from the screen.
No offense, David, but that sounds like an awful ruckus. I'll pass.
I sighed. We'll send you another supply drop, I said. Nighthawk might want you to charge some power cells for him, though.
Whatever I am commanded to do, Edmund said. But David, I do think you're wrong about one aspect of the powers. You claim my fear of dogs created my weakness originally, but before Calamity, I wasn't so afraid of them. I didn't like them, mind you. Might even have hated them. But this fear? It seemed to bloom alongside my powers. It's like the powers needed something to be afraid of.
My quarter, I whispered.
Hmm?
Nothing. That was silly. Calamity couldn't have been watching me then.
Thanks again.
He nodded to me, then switched off the mobile. I knelt down and went over the contents of the last pack, then set it with the others. Right as I was doing so, Megan peeked in on me. She hesitated in the doorway, looking at me with a befuddled expression, mouth half open, as if she'd forgotten what she was going to say.
The hat, I realized.
Pull it off or play it cool? I decided to play it halfway and reached up to yank my mobile out of the duct tape, but left the hat on. I calmly strapped the mobile to my arm.
Yes?
I asked, ignoring the metric ton of silvery refuse hanging at eye level. The hat slipped backward, now too heavy in the rear because of the canteen. I caught it and yanked it into place.
Yup, smooth.
I'm not even going to ask, she said. You done in here?
Just finished the last one,
Had a nice chat with Edmund, too. His experiences match yours.
So there's no getting rid of the weakness for good.
Well, the potency of his weakness seems to have decreased over time.
That's something, at least.
We're ready out here.
Good. I stood, gathering up the packs.
You're not going to wear the hat on the mission, are you?
I casually removed the hat, though I had to yank it hard as the tape was stuck to my hair, then took a drink from the canteen, with the hat still attached to it. I put the hat back on and tugged it into place.
Just testing some ideas.
So smooth. She rolled her eyes as she left. I tossed the hat aside as soon as she was gone, then carted the packs out. The team was gathered in the main room, lit by glowing mobiles and the waning light. This space had only one story. On either side of the large, round main room was a smaller room. Mizzy and Abraham wore our stealth suits, sleek and form-fitting, with heat sinks at the waists and goggled hoods that could be pulled up and over their faces.
"Team Hip, ready to go?"
Mizzy said, as I handed her and Abraham their backpacks, which were the heaviest.
"What happened to Team One?"
I asked.
"Obviously not hip enough," she said. I considered Team Black instead, but figured that was, like, kind of racist or something.
"Isn't it all right if you call yourselves Black, though?" Megan asked, leaning against the wall, arms folded.
"Since you're both African-American?"
"Canadian," Abraham corrected.
"Yeah," Mizzy said. "Maybe it's okay if I pick the name. Honestly, I could never remember. Pre-Calamity folks cared a lot about race. Like, it's good to remember that not everything sucks worse now than it did then. Some stuff sucked in those days, too. It's like, without the epics, everyone had to find other things to argue about. Race, nationality. Oh, and sports teams. Seriously, if you go back in time, do not bring up sports teams."
"I'll try to remember that," I said, handing Cody his pack. I wished the things she mentioned were confined to the past, but the way Ildithians seemed to have segregated themselves indicated that, even with the epics, we were still perfectly capable of arguing about race. Cody took his pack. He was wearing camo, his sniper rifle over his shoulder, and Herman, the crystal grower, attached to his belt. He would use it to create a hiding place out of salt for running ops from the top of a building near Sharp Tower. With the rifle, he might be able to give us some emergency cover. I'd suggested myself as ops, but Mizzy and Abraham would need someone on ops who could dig into files and schematics and coach them on technological details. That left me on Megan's team, which I wasn't complaining about. We would be sneaking into the party, though we'd had to alter Tia's plan, picking one of her backup options as our method of getting in. I handed Megan her pack.
"Everyone ready?"
"Ready as we can be," Abraham said, "with less than a week to practice."
"What about me?"
a voice asked. We turned to find Larsener standing in the doorway to the hideout's last room. He decorated it in his preferred fashion, though with fewer sofas. Some of the mass he could use in manifesting objects was dedicated to maintaining the tools he'd made for the team.
"You want to come?"
I asked, surprised. He glared at me.
"What if someone shows up here while you're gone?" he said. "You're abandoning me."
"Sparks," I said. "You're worse than Edmund. If someone shows up, project yourself into a decoy and lead them away. That's one of your powers, right?"
"It's painful," he said, folding his arms. "I don't like doing it."
"Oh, for the..." I shook my head, turning to the rest of the team.
"Let's do this."
26.
Sharp Tower rose, a dark form in the night save for the top floors, which glowed from the inside. The salt was a dusty gray in this area, so that the top floors seemed somehow both light and dark at once. Like a black hole wearing a silly birthday hat. Megan and I approached, packs slung over our shoulders, wearing new faces courtesy of another dimension. This sort of little illusion was easy for her, and she could maintain it indefinitely, so long as I didn't stray too far from her. I couldn't help trying to work out the mechanics of it.
Were these the faces of some random people, or were they people who, in their dimension, were going the same place we were? A large number of people gathered on the ground floor of the building. The old windows, made of thinner salt, had a warm glow to them, and several doors had been opened up to let the elite gather. I stopped, watching another group arrive, conveyed in bicycle rickshaws. They were dressed like people in Nukago, short, sparkling 1920s-style dresses and bright lipstick on the women, pinstriped suits and sharp hats like in old movies on the men. I half expected them to be carrying Tommy guns in violin cases. Instead, their bodyguards were armed with Glocks and P-30s. "Darren?" Megan asked, using my fake name. "Sorry," I said, breaking out of my thoughts. "Reminds me of Nukago." Memories of my youth carried a lot of baggage. The guests were being entertained on the ground floor while they waited for their turn in the elevator up to the party. Music poured out of the lobby, the type Mizzy would have liked. Lots of thumping and rattling. It seemed at odds with the elegant formal wear. Martinis and caviar were being passed around. More signs of favor and power. I'd never even tasted a martini. For years I'd assumed it was a brand of car. Together, Megan and I took a sharp right outside and rounded the building toward a smaller door at the back. Instead of trying to fake our way up the elevator with the rich people, we'd decided to try an avenue where we'd be under far less scrutiny. Tia's plan had included a backup option of sending Team 2 up with the servants. With the images in Tia's notes, we'd been able to fake an invitation here and a quick check.